Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what is going on? This is, again, another edition of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 92 of Triple P Weekly. I'm starting to really close in on episode 100 of this podcast. Eddie Greer here in windy, rainy Manhattan, Kansas. Always do the Purple Project Podcast, where, of course, the host lives at the Manhattan, Kansas, home of Kansas State University. Of course, you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon, and a few more podcasting platforms out there. Obviously, we try to post episodes almost every day of the week while I can, including the weekly edition of this podcast. Obviously, we missed out on episode 91 with Curtis Kelly. Definitely check that out, as well as our first special guest on the pod, Keelan Valentine, as well. And coming this Thursday, which that Thursday pod recording will be on Friday, special guest number 3 on the podcast. Obviously, I'm excited, really excited for that. I am not going to give that away. Only my co-host knows about that, so I'm not going to give that away. That's a little teaser for y'all to make sure y'all come back again for some more K-State content here on the Pro Project Podcast. Of course, this is the first of 2 weeklies of the podcast. Let's be on none other than my co-host, usually for these podcasts, out there in San Diego, California, none other than AA, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening?
Not much, Eddie. You know, we've got a lot of movement in the K-State side of things. Obviously, we'll dive into Jerome Tang coming on board as the next men's basketball coach for K-State. And obviously, the women's team, they were able to beat Washington State, and then they did lose to NC State. And you know, we'll always be able to break that down. And then we have also got, I do not know if my chat just wanted me or not, but anyway, we also have got some other things to break down and discuss. What we were talking about before here just a few hours ago, Nigel Pack announced that he was going to declare for the NBA draft, and what comes of that is yet to be seen. He could still come back and just get an evaluation. He could go and actually, try to get drafted. Who knows? We'll obviously, talk about that. It looks like Marquise Noel is going to be coming back based on what he posted on social media yesterday. But lots of for us to talk about. But outside of all of that, Eddie, you have got a lot going on in your little sports world right now, because both of your professional sports teams just seem to be going through some things right now. Your football team, going after Deshaun Watson, not landing that. Now they traded Matt Ryan. Now they've signed Mariota, and that seems to have stirred the Falcons fan base, or the bird's nest, so to speak. I don't know what you guys call it down there in LA. I really know. But whatever you guys call it. It seems like it's stirred up there. And then with the Braves, obviously, the whole Freddie Freeman thing, I was literally just reading an article today on Freddie Freeman talking about how he really likes how he looks in Dodger blue, and all I've seen is articles about him talking about, how stunned he was when, the Braves made the move for Matt Olson, and this and that, and yada, 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 and then the Braves being like, look, he should talk to his agent, because his agent didn't, his agent was giving us an ultimatum, so we had to go out and do what was best for us, and then, pretty soon being like, oh, I don't feel appreciated, but and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, what on earth? Like, everyone just move on. Like, everyone just go to their corners and just begin your respective seasons and just try to beat each other when you play each other. But, yeah, I'm just, you're going through a lot, Eddie. You're going through a lot. I said that laying a sports fan right now. And, you know, hopefully you're hanging in there.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. We'll dive into the tank here in just a second, just a little bit. But yeah, I've actually, going back to last year's, one of the episodes of the podcast, I made a statement talking to you about Freddie Freeman, and I was prepared for him to let him go. And I've already moved on past all that drama. Yeah, I'm just ready to play baseball. Yeah, to my surprise. Yeah, I'm disappointed. He still hasn't moved on from that. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to be playing those guys early this year. And we will get the Dodgers back at home sometime early in the summer as well. I haven't checked the full schedule of the Braves yet. I know the podcast I was listening to that I usually listen to mentioned that. So there's just a lot of... obviously, I'll be intrigued to see what the crowd reaction is going to be when Freddie returns to Atlanta, obviously. But obviously, I am moving on. It's done, it's done. A little sad, but I was prepared for him to go in the situation, the fallout with Freddie Freeman and Braves is a little confusing, you know, I mean, if you ask me. I can do a whole podcast on just this. But
well,
yeah.
By the way, it's going to be really interesting when Kenley Jansen strikes out Freddie Freeman to win the World Series, win the NLCS for the Braves. That's right. Kenley Jansen striking out Freddie Freeman to win the NLCS for the Braves because Kenley Jansen is a Brave.
Yes, and I was very stunned.
Me too.
The double A, not you, but the other double A, Alex Anthopoulos, our general manager for the Atlanta Braves, for those of you who don't know, pulled off that move. I can say tit for tat, I suppose, there. Kenley Jansen, a long-time closer for the Dodgers. We got him. He's on the Braves now, and we already got a stacked bullpen, one of the best in the game, and now we add him to the mix, and we added Colin McHugh on into the bullpen, and another arm. I think it was just those two guys mainly. But yeah, you already add two good, really good guys, depth pieces, and we get Darren O'Day back after a year away from the team. So you're already adding, which really was a really good bullpen from last year, really deep, really, that depth in the bullpen already. So yeah, I mean, the Braves and Dodgers, folks, they're going to be... going out after one another for next couple of years. We'll see. You know what? We'll just see who has the last laugh. Last year, we got the last laugh on them. We'll just see what happens this year. We'll see who wins the trade. That's for sure. So that's all I'm going to have to say on that note for sure. But the Braves and Dodgers, definitely. If things play out the way they are on paper... could be another rematch of the NLCS, the third sequel of the postseason. So yeah, I'm fired up. I'm just ready to get the season going. So the defense of our, and not to mention that we didn't have a Ronald Acuna Jr. last year. So, and we weren't even on 500 until August. So if we stay healthy, I tell you, better rest of the Major League Baseball. Better look out. That's all I got to say about that. More on the Falcons in the podcast. Yeah.
You might want to say that for the end.
Yeah, I'm going to say that for the end of the podcast. But K-State.
Once you start, you may not be able to stop, Eddie.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That's the truth, because this is the K-State podcast, and we got to take care of some house cleaning first before we get into the rest of the ranting. outside of K-State. But yes, Jerome Tang, we got our basketball coach. We mentioned him on the last edition of the Pro Project Podcast Weekly before Curtis Kelly came on. Tang, he's 55 years old. Already mentioned this in the daily, so I'm not going to go too much in depth over that. If you missed out on the daily of yesterday with Jerome Tang and hired a new coach of K-State basketball, men's basketball, I should say, preferably, go check that daily out. Tang, he agreed to a 6-year contract, which was approved by K-State Athletics, board of directors, and president Richard Linton. Tang will be paid $2.1 million this upcoming year and will receive a $100,000 base salary, which increases each year remaining on the contract. You can do the math from there as well. So I already mentioned the daily about my reactions to Jerome Tang. Alex, you mentioned him last week on the podcast. What are your initial thoughts about new head coach of K-State basketball, Jerome Tang?
I did mention him on the podcast last week, Eddie, and I apologize for hearing batting of paper plastic in the background because I just threw a piece of plastic to my cast and she would leave me alone. So apologies if you hear that. It's what you get to be able to hear me. so don't leave me alone. So Jerome Tang, obviously, Eddie, you mentioned it. I brought it up last week in the podcast. So we were going through, you know, we were out here with Curtis Kelly. We were going over possible coaching candidates for the job. And like many K-State fans, my top guy was Brad Underwood. He was on open and honest about that, and vocal that yeah, he's my top guy. Of course, he's my top guy. He's a tremendous coach. He's had success everywhere he's been, you know, and he's from K-State and from McPherson and coached at K-State under Frank Martin and all those things. I was also very open and honest from the get-go that I thought that was quite unrealistic, the thought of getting Brad Underwood. It was kind of felt like trying to get a Ferrari when you can afford a minivan. Look, minivan's nice, you know, it can do, and it's got a lot of good uses. Not a bad car necessarily. I mean, I wouldn't buy a minivan. Maybe that's a bad comparison because I wouldn't buy a minivan, but I'd still use that comparison. Kind of like comparing it to Ferrari. Look, it's good, it's useful, but you can't buy a Ferrari with the money it takes to buy a minivan. You know, you just can't do it. There is no way, Eddie, that the K-State was going to be able to compete financially with Illinois for Brad Underwood. And at some point, Brad Underwood can want to come home all he wants, which the reports are from multiple K-State reporters that he did want to go home. But it had to make sense for him. And there's no way that was ever going to work and make sense financially. There is just no way. And by the sounds of it, K-State made a really competitive offer to him, or made him a really nice offer, but once again, there's nothing. There was no way in my mind that was going to compete with Illinois, and so that played out exactly how I thought it would play out. I thought that Gene should take his shot. I thought he'd miss. That would be fine. At least he took it. You know, you can't make a shot if you don't take it. And then move on to a more realistic candidate. And for me, the top guy was Jerome Tang. He was the top guy below Brad Underwood. I was really, really high on him from the get-go. Immediately when I saw him as a possible candidate for the job, he kind of shot up my mental board, I guess you could say, of coaching candidates of who would be my top one. So for me, it was really, I wouldn't even call it a 1 and 2, Eddie. For me, it was kind of more like 1A with Brad Underwood, 1B with Jerome Tang, and then it was really, number 3, number 4 after that. I mean, I really thought that highly of him. So, 19 years at Baylor. You've been the associate head coach there the last 5 years. Scott Drew at press conference today talking about, Jerome Tang and everything he did at Baylor. I've also heard a lot of the Baylor people, a lot of Baylor reporters, they're all kind of frustrated that he stayed in the Big 12 because they're concerned what he's going to do at K-State because they know how good of a coach he is. I think that tells you everything that you need to know And then immediately you're thinking, oh, yeah, we're happy for him, but gosh, I wish he didn't go to K-State, because there's no doubt in our minds he's going to succeed there. So I think that just kind of tells you what others think of the hire. You look at the national, a lot of the national beat guys, national college basketball guys, and they all think that it was just a tremendous hire, tremendous home run for K-State, and K-State has made one of the best coaching hires here in the cycle so far. And so if you're K-State, you got to be feeling great about it. Somebody who's part of a program like Baylor, Eddie, where you're literally coming off of like a murder situation. When Scott Drew goes in there, they don't have enough guys on scholarship. They're playing walk-ons. They don't have a full schedule because of all the sanctions. I mean, gosh, they could have got the death penalty, Eddie. That program there at Baylor, they come back and they, for the last 19 years, turn that into a program that, for all intents and purposes, has gotten one seed the last 3 years and has won a national title and won multiple Big 12 titles. And Jerome Tang's been there since day one, all the way through. He has learned to win about every different way that you can win with about every type of player that you can think of. And to be able to do that is something that I really don't think you put a price on it. And so he's a great recruiter. Players love him. And he's got a lot of energy, a lot of intensity, and he brings a lot of excitement to the fan base. And I think that's something that this fan base that he desperately needed. The last thing that Gene could do was hire somebody who was going to be kind of bring the reaction that Bruce did, where it was kind of a fans divided, really kind of a lukewarm perception. K-State couldn't afford that. You and I both talked about this. The program had gotten stale and with the fans, and they needed an injection of energy, of juice. And I really think that Jerome Tang and Brad Underwood were the two guys that could provide that. So to be able to get Jerome Tang in there and see the excitement from the fan base, to see unity again, amazing. Amazing. That is what this fan base needs. You know, Jerome Tang had his message to student section on Twitter yesterday where he was talking about how terrifying it was to walk across that court in the Octagon of Doom back in the glory days that you and I have talked about here in the past, and just how it was the best home crowd in America, and how we need to get the Octagon of Doom back to that place. I was ready to go and roll again, Eddie. I was ready to go back to K-State, put in my papers, and be back in the fall. I was ready to roll, man. I was ready to roll. I was like, maybe I do need to go get my master's now. I don't know. But you know, make room, Eddie. Make room for another. I hope you have an extra spare bedroom. I think it was a good hire. I think it was the right hire. And I think it was good also of Gene to move quickly through this process. I think the last thing that you wanted was kind of this lingering around. I think that you wanted to get done quickly and you wanted to make the right hire. I think he was able to do both of those things. And I think that, I think that the fans are taking it well. I think the players will take it well. And I'm just excited to see number one, I'm excited to see Jerome Tang at his press conference on Thursday and to see what he says. I'm really eager to see what he says there.
Yeah, good point.
And then number two, after that, I'm excited to see what he does. You know, I'm excited to see what happens in regards to players staying, players leaving. Jerome Tang getting the recruiting trail, hitting the transfer portal. I would assume he's going to probably be active in the transfer portal, and that K-State's probably going to get some guys from there. So, you know, just kind of excited to see it. I mean, I'm excited to see this evolution of this team because we mentioned it. I mentioned it, Nigel, and kind of the unknown around him with the NBA draft. Well, if Nigel does come back and Marquise comes back, which it looks like Marquise is coming back,
I saw Marquise. That tweet right there. That
to me, that sure looks like I'm coming back.
That looks like he's coming back.
But that sure looks like a I'm coming back tweet to me. If Nigel Pack doesn't end up coming back, Marquise Noel comes back, boom, you already got one of the best backcourts in the Big 12. That's a pretty good place to start, you know. See what you can do to transport from there. And, you know, I think you can see with K-State similar to what you saw with Iowa State this year. Iowa State's a school that's playing the Sweet 16 now. They won 2 games 1 year, and they won 20 games the next year. I'm not saying K-State will make the Sweet 16, but I think they could make that type of jump that Iowa State made in regards to being a 21 team. I think that if things fall right, that could be a possibility for next year. So I think it could be a quick turnaround. I think Jerome Tang is a big reason why. I just think that with his recruiting ties and with his coaching expertise and what he can bring to the table, it can really help them quickly kind of get his basketball program back to what we expect, our expectations here at K-State. So I'm eager for it, Eddie. I'm eager to see it.
Yeah. Definitely the fan base here at K-State and all over the United States, if you're a K-State fan not living in K-State of Kansas, definitely was on board with this hire, unlike the Bruce hire. You're spot on about that. People were kind of had a mixed bag when Bruce was hired.
There was a protest today that Bruce had.
ten years ago. Yeah.
I don't think there will be a protest on Thursday.
No, I don't think so. And yeah, I actually mentioned it at the Corners podcast. They were recording episode 92 of Triple PW on Tuesday, March 22nd. And yeah, you guys should be able to hear this. This will be posted tomorrow night ahead of that press conference on Thursday, officially introducing Jerome Tang as K-State's next head basketball coach. This is the Pro Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. Yeah, definitely. And to keep the fan base strong, or even stronger, hopefully get Nigel Pack back. And you hit on that. We talked about that before I pressed record button on as well. So if he is doing what he's doing now, testing the waters, like we said, and he sees where his stock is at and he doesn't like it. This is what Dean, Barry, and Cam did that great recruiting class. If not the best for Bruce Weber there, tested the waters a little bit and it came back. So that's what he's doing. Then that would be a big sigh of relief for K-State fans everywhere, because we did definitely want to see him back in that post of Marquise Noel. I did see that. I saw it yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, I think it was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
he seemed fired up. He seemed fired up about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yep, I'm definitely fired up as well. Get the Doom back. No Jerome Tang talked about that a little bit. We've been talking about that all along. So,
by the way, Eddie, I gotta say, if maybe aware to his press conference Thursday, I don't know, but it's video that he had for the students, he was wearing his Baylor national championship ring. First off, that thing is massive. Freaking massive. I mean, holy smokes, it's all I could look at in that whole video. Second off, what a recruiting tool. Very underrated, but what a recruiting tool. Being able to walk into homes with that sucker on your finger and be like, yeah, I won this. Yeah. You see that? That's a Division I national championship ring. You see the size of that? You see all the gold on that? That's not a bad sell, Eddie. That's not a bad sell. A sell that K-State did not have with Bruce Weber.
Yeah. Not too bad. So K-State's got its next men's basketball coach. And we're going to stay, before we talk about the women's basketball team and their season, we're going to stay on the men's side, obviously. My goodness, the NCAA tournament, the first two rounds in the books. Boy, we have seen our share of some good games and plenty of upsets there. And we're going to stay with the Big 12, keep it short and sweet. There are a couple teams in here, Alex, that are, or one particularly, that I didn't expect to make a deep run in here. Obviously, you have KU getting past Texas Southern, obviously, easily, and then getting past Creighton, and they're going to be playing Providence. That's going to be a good game. Yeah. In the Midwest bracket there, let's see if I shift my eyes to the West bracket side of the bracket. That's where I find Texas Tech. They do it again. They seem to have a knack for
3 times in 4 years.
Yep, they get to the Sweet 16. They beat Montana State 97-62, and knock off Notre Dame in a 3-11 matchup, 59-53, and they will face Duke in Mike Krzyzewski's last hurrah there. I believe that's 24th, That, I believe, is a Thursday game there, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. Yeah, yep. 24th is Thursday, 25th is Friday. Okay, yep. That's right. So, sorry, doing the calendar in the back of my head. Yeah, so Texas Tech, Duke, that is going to be a awesome game there as well. Head-to-head matchup there. So, Texas Tech looking to spoil Mike Krzyzewski's last parade there as well. And then, Alex, we go down here to the other side of the Midwest bracket. We have another Big 12 team still alive. That is Iowa State. Iowa State beat LSU 59-54 in their first round matchup and then held off third upset, third seeded Wisconsin 54-49. And they will play another team that had their upsets, Miami, knocking off USC and then upsetting Auburn 79-61. So a class of 11 versus 10. 10 versus 11 in the Sweet 16. Yeah, just what everyone predicted. And for the second year in a row, I did not fill out a bracket. So I'm undefeated for the second year in a row. Did not fill out a bracket, or say multiple brackets, I just say. After that, obviously, St. Peter's, the Cinderella this year, they're going to be playing Purdue on Friday night in the other East semifinal as well. So a lot of good games around here. UCLA, North Carolina knocked out the defending champion Baylor. That was a really good game. I missed that game.
Crazy, yeah.
I did see highlights of it. I missed out on a great game there. Arkansas will be playing the number one overall seed of Gonzaga on Thursday. Arizona taking on Houston. Houston, like Texas Tech, doing it again. They know how to win the postseason. They just know how to win.
That is their third straight Sweet 16 appearance.
Yep, that's their third straight appearance.
Crazy.
There as well. And last but not least, Michigan, Juwan Howard. Getting that Michigan for the second year in a row back to the Sweet 16, and they'll play Jay Wright's Villanova squad 2 versus 11. You got two 11, number 11 seeds still there in the NCAA bracket. Alex, what have been your thoughts about the Big 12 teams and overall this tournament?
Yeah, well, overall tournament, March never fails. It always provides. It's amazing how you have this tournament, and then you always end up with these crazy upsets, and you get the 15 seed at the in the Sweet 16. Granted, that's the only third time it's happened, but still, get to St. Peter's knocking off Kentucky and beating Murray State and moving on to play Purdue, and you look around. You mentioned you got a 10-11 matchup in the Sweet 16. Which is wild. Although if I was gonna guess that happened in any region, it would be the Midwest region, because the Midwest region, for all intents and purposes, Eddie sucks. I don't really know how else to put it. The region was quite soft from the beginning. So if I was gonna guess a region, it was gonna have top seeds drop. Aside from KU, it was going to be that Midwest regions. But still, you get your 10-11 matchup. And you're just kind of getting craziness all over. I think that TCU should be in right now. They sure seemed like TCU was fouled at the end of that game against Arizona. They ended up going to overtime. Really surprised the way that game ended up, but you know what? Nothing you can do about it now. Arizona moves on right in my backyard, by the way, here in San Diego, Eddie. I realize San Diego is hosting first and second round games until like mid last week. I did not realize it was literally just a mile and a half from my apartment over at Viejas Arenas, because I live pretty close. I live about a mile and a half from San Diego State. And so the arena is there on campus, so it's only about a mile and a half for me. So I actually very briefly thought about going and watching Texas Tech, because Texas Tech was here as well, and watching them since they're only about 10 minutes from me. Decided not to, but in their game against Notre Dame, but that did end up being a pretty good game there. But But yeah, so you could make an argument that the TCU could have gotten that game here in San Diego against Arizona, but they didn't. Arizona's moving on, going to the Sweet 16. So for the Big 12 in particular, you know, Texas Tech, Eddie, doesn't surprise me. You mentioned that they got a knack for winning in March. It's something that they do. They made Sweet 16 three of the last 4 years. And I have beating Duke in my bracket. I had them going to the Elite Eight. So that was something that I projected. So I predicted them to be here in this game against this team, and I have them winning. Which, by the way, Duke and Texas Tech are the complete opposite of each other. They couldn't be any more different, those two basketball teams. So it should make for a fascinating matchup. But Texas Tech, yeah, you mentioned it. They just completely dominated, in their first round game, winning by 30, 35 points. And then, you know, coming back against a gritty Notre Dame team, you know, winning a game that did Tech play great? No, they didn't. They really didn't play great against Notre Dame, but they found a way to make plays, down the stretch of that game and get to the second weekend. And so, you know, they can regroup and, see, you know, what they can do against against a really good Duke team that's got NBA prospects just littered throughout their roster this year. Got a couple guys on that roster that are going to go top 10, so or will likely go top 10. So a really, really talented Duke squad, and obviously Coach K is on his final farewell tour, so they'll obviously want to win it for him as well. But no surprises there with Texas Tech. We'll see what happens. Looking at KU, no surprises there. I had them go to the Elite Eight as well. I had them losing in the Elite Eight to Auburn, but I didn't think Auburn was going to make it to the Elite Eight. I was more just kind of wishful thinking. From the get-go, I thought this region sucks and KU's just going to cruise to the Final Four. I do think that is what's going to happen. Creighton gave them a hell of a fight. Creighton only had like six players available or something, or maybe six scholarship players. I can't remember what it was, but Creighton was down. They were down some guys, and they continued to throw punch after punch at KU and gave them a great game. 1 point game with a minute and a half left. So you know they fought hard. But give credit to KU, Eddie, as much as I hate to say it. KU, they stayed the course. And then once again, we talked about Texas Tech making plays down the stretch, and they weren't playing their best. KU did the exact same thing. They made plays down the stretch and went on a 6-0 run in that game. And to win it by seven, which is what great teams do. And I hate KU, but that is what great teams do. And I've said it from the get-go. I don't know if this KU team looks like a Final Four team, but I do really like the way that they play. So you know, it worked out for them. And I've always thought that KU's defense could possibly bite them in the butt here in the postseason, but I just don't think they're going to get a matchup where it's going to potentially burn them until the Final Four, because you look at Providence and, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup. Providence absolutely can beat them, but I don't think that Providence is a team that can necessarily, I don't know. I look at that, I feel like that's a relatively favorable matchup for KU, the way KU plays and the way Providence plays. We'll see. And then obviously, if they make it to the Elite Eight, they're playing Miami or Iowa State. And I like their shots in either one of those teams. They swept Iowa State, obviously.
Yep.
And Miami, that seems like it's a little far-fetched. If anything, yeah. I think Iowa State would give them the best game because Iowa State knows them. Mm-hmm. Iowa State knows KU, and they would not be scared of KU. If anyone would knock them off of those two teams, it would be Iowa State, just because, like I said, the familiarity between the two squads and you know, knowing KU just kind of, you know, could maybe muck it up a little bit. But I think KU's going to the Final Four. And if they're going to the Final Four, I think Texas going to the Elite Eight. And let's see. And Iowa State, I think, what do I think Iowa State's going to do? You know what? I think Iowa State wins. I think Iowa State beats Miami. I think they beat Miami. Iowa State hasn't. They're to the Sweet 16, but they still haven't looked like very impressive. You mentioned it. They went 59-54, and then they went like 54-49. Like,
yeah, they have not been impressive.
Not like that doesn't scream like, oh my gosh, amazing. But you got to give them credit. They're winning.
in March. So you know what? I'll be the Big 12 homer. I'll stay on the train. I'll take them to the Elite Eight. Losing to KU. I may be wrong. The more I think about that, the more I think Miami's looked better. So I don't know. Maybe Miami will win it. But yes, give me Iowa State, Eddie. So, but yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for the second weekend and to see what it brings. And, you know, like I said, March Madness is a great, great time of the year. I have a feeling the St. Peter's, their Cinderella story will end in the Sweet 16. I feel like Purdue having a week to get ready for them will probably end that. but what a great story if they could win that. So I'll be sure to tune in and see if they can pull off another upset. So it should be a fun second weekend.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Alex, Amy, Eddie Green, Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition rolls on. Yeah, definitely. I go Iowa State there against Miami there, and Providence isn't going to make it look easy. They're going to make it difficult on. I just say they're going to make it difficult on KU. On Friday night, Providence is a team that they definitely give KU a run for the money there, but I think KU somehow, some way, is going to pull it out.
Yeah.
So you know how that story going to go there.
We know the story very well now.
Yep, and then the other game that hasn't been talked about much, UCLA in North Carolina. That is going to be a classic matchup. They are two blue bloods. Right there, the rich history of both programs right there. So, North Carolina obviously coming off the overtime knockoff of upset of the defending champs Baylor there, 93-86, which allowed the interview with Jerome Tang, and eventually he's now our head coach. So thank you North Carolina for that. But yeah, so that's gonna be a good game. That's on Friday. One of the late night games there as well. So a lot to look forward to in the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 this week on the men's side. As we'll see what happens there. Definitely going to be some more drama ahead of the NCAA tournament. Meanwhile, on the flip side, before I get into the women's side real quick, before I dive, we dive, talk K-State women's basketball, real quick. When this podcast goes out tomorrow, episode 92 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, K-State hosting Air Force tomorrow. That game might be over by the time this podcast rolls out. That's a 4 p.m. first pitch, a little bit after that as well. And then the track team heads to Tech Austin on Thursday morning, or actually Wednesday night, but all the Texas relays will start Thursday, March 24th, this week, on Thursday, 11 o'clock, down in Austin for the track, for the Texas relays. Too many T's there. Texas relays begin, and so does the K-State outdoor season for track and field for K-State. That's going to be Thursday and Friday morning. Friday, day two, is going to be starting at 9 in Austin there. And then it's going to be a split squad, it looks like, because they got a quick turnaround. This track and field team busy this week. They will go to, looks like, the Bobcat Invitational on Friday. Actually, Friday is a split squad, excuse me. Bobcat Invitational, and then they got to go to Emporia State. Some of them will go to Bobcat, and then some of them will go to Emporia State for the relay. So busy track and field scheduled this week as well. And I don't have the baseball scheduled for at least for the rest of the week pulled up at the moment. But I do know that they're playing Air Force tomorrow afternoon at 4. I'm doing two things at the same time here. Let's see the baseball here. Okay, now it's going to be slow. Great. Oh, yeah, there it is right there. Schedule for... Oh, yeah, here we go. So, yeah, so finally... All right, so the baseball team, huge, Alex. So the baseball team, they're going to be... Looks like they're going to be hosting TCU. No, they're going to TCU. They're going to TCU, who is ranked 19th, Alex, in the country there. And K-State's been playing really good baseball as of late. And at the recording of this podcast, the game against Air Force, actually, game one of two, was canceled due to a lot of rain that we've gotten here, Alex, over the past 2 days. It recently, before the podcast started, it was really windy outside, so apparently the nasty weather isn't done yet, but it should be done by morning. So according to the weather report I got received or I read, it should be still overcast. So no rain, at least in the forecast for tomorrow at the recording of this podcast. It's 10:48 p.m. Central Time when I said that. So they're going to be playing at least, they should be playing, though, two here. I know I'm doing two things at one time because I just hopped on to K-State stuff here. Yeah, they're going to stay with the original game, as promised, for tomorrow, 4 p.m. Yep, so they're going to be doing that as well. So I don't think...
Are they having a double... Okay, so they are having a doubleheader tomorrow.
No, they're not. They're going to go with...
They're not having a doubleheader.
They're not having a doubleheader. They're going to stick with the original as it was. If they play tonight, which they did not, so they're going to stick with the 4 p.m. first pitch. So no doubleheader. So this is going to be... According to what I'm on KStateSports.com, so no doubleheader.
I hate losing games. I hate losing games on schedules, Eddie. It bugs me. Gosh, I don't know. I hate losing games. I don't know why. It bugs me. Bugs me. Sorry. It hurts me. It hurts me when K-State men's basketball team lost that game.
I was just about to say that. Alex. Yeah, the first conference games for conference series. For K-State, TCU, on the road. It'll all start Friday night at TCU at 6. First pitch a little bit after that. Then game 2's on Saturday at 2. And then the finale's at 1. So the K-State baseball team recently, before this rain, the only thing that's cooled them off is the weather to this point. So they've really turned things around, and we kind of been saying it all along. They need to stack up wins, and they've been doing that.
Exactly. You mentioned it. They need to stack. After they started 3-7, they needed to stack up wins. And in fact, it started as 1-6. It was 1-6 they started, and then they had that series against Loyola Marymount. And I told you, Eddie, I said that they got to win. They got to win that series. Like, I don't want to call a series a must-win series there in March, early March, but they need to win that series, and they did. And then obviously they've come home and they've won eight in a row since that, and they're 10-1 in their last 11. So they're winning. They're winning games. We talked about their series obviously last week. We talked about their series against Central Connecticut State, and then their win on the road against Omaha. Also, they had the win against Nebraska at home too. And then since we talked last. They had a really nice series against Morehead State where they really just dominated. They dominated those first two games. The third game, they did not dominate. The third game, they scored, I think, 8 unanswered or 7, 8 unanswered, something like that. So they were actually losing in that third game against Morehead State and made a comeback to get that win. But I think it might have been 8 unanswered that they scored in that game to take the lead. But either way, nice comeback by them. Not necessarily a team they should be having to come back against, but that's okay. They dominated in games 1 and 2. They won those two games a combined 25-4. Those first two games against Morehead State. So they clearly took care of business against them the first two. They got in a little trouble there in the third game, but they found a way to come back and win that, get the sweep, and so now they're sitting at 11-7. Obviously. Going into that little two-game series against Air Force ticks me off, Eddie, that they won't get both those games against Air Force. school like K-State, they need to get every win that they can get. I am telling you, if they're going to potential with the competition that they got in the Big 12, you've got to get wins where you can get them. I know it gets annoying to hear me say it, but they absolutely have to. But look, They need to get a win. They need to get that win against Air Force, Eddie. They need to get that win against Air Force. Number one, because they dug themselves in a big ass hole at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Number two, you've got a road series that you mentioned against number 19 TCU. I'm going to guess that they're not going to win that series. So
bold prediction here on the Pro Project Podcast. You hear first.
Go on the road and be a top 20 team. I don't. Based on what we have seen the last year and a half from this baseball team, that is not. They don't win a lot against ranked teams on the road. That is not something that they do very often. So, hopefully Eddie against TCU they can get one. You know, hopefully they don't get swept. You know, I think that would really just kind of be my hope for them. Go down to Fort Worth, try to get one game, and come home and, you know, take care of Northern Colorado. You know, win your two games against them, and then. Start your Big 12 home slate against Oklahoma State in a three-game set and see if you can maybe get a series win there. I think that is really your best bet for the Cats just because that's going to be a tough series. That's going to be tough for them to go down to TCU and be able to win series. I think that would be a massive upset. I think it's asking too much of this squad. Like I said, great if they could do it. Kind of thinks a little unrealistic to think that they will. So, you know, like I said, if they could just go in and they can get a game, I think that you take that and you come home and you just try to, you know, sweep Northern Colorado and prepare for Oklahoma State. And obviously try to win that game against Air Force on the other side of the schedule too. So, K-State's done a really nice job, Eddie, of digging themselves out of a kind of an ugly hole. They can't put themselves back in a hole because I'm sure many of you recall last year, K-State started off Big 12 play very slow. I think they started off Big 12 play, it was 1-5 or 1-6 or it was somewhere in that ballpark. It was somewhere in that ballpark.
Because they got swept. By Oklahoma State.
Their schedule was tough at the beginning. I'll be honest. And they played some road games, but still, it was a bad start. And the whole season, Eddie, they were digging themselves out of a hole. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that again. You just dug yourself out of a hole from the beginning of the season. The last thing you want to do is go dig yourself a brand new hole. That's not what you need. That's not what you need to do. Because I remember last year, Eddie, I think they started the season at Oklahoma State. They blew like two games in the eighth inning, got swept in that series, and then I think they went to like TCU, and then they did like the same thing. They blew a game or two that they had late. Maybe it wasn't TCU, maybe it was like Texas Tech or someone. But either way, that's kind of how it started, and it was just not. It was not ideal, and they were just digging themselves out. And they did. They did end up digging themselves out of the hole for the most part because they were so good at home, but you don't want to put yourself in that position. So if you're the Cats, try to avoid a sweep. Try to just get one. Try to win those games on each side of it. The one thing I like about their schedule this year, Eddie, and I think I've talked to you about this before, but these Big 12 games, they have a little buffer. They're not going from TCU to Oklahoma State to Texas Tech. You know, they're playing TCU. They got a couple against Northern Colorado to break it up. Then you get Oklahoma State, and you got a game against Creighton to break it up. Then you get Texas Tech and Texas, and then you get Wichita State and Omaha and UC Irvine to kind of break it up. So, I mean, they've got some games to kind of break some Big 12 play up. So, hopefully that will help them not end up kind of in the predicament that I was mentioning from last year. But it's going to be a tough series. It's going to be a tough series for them. It's a tough way to begin the Big 12 slate. But as Pete Hughes has said before, if you have dreams of playing baseball in Omaha, you got to play these teams. You got to beat them. So we'll see what happens.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yep, you gotta beat them. Well put. Pro Project Podcast Weekly Episode 92 rolls on this late Tuesday evening. Yeah, TCU, three games, and then Alex Metzenit. They have your midweek two-game series back at Tony Family Stadium, where, again, of note, K-State after recording this podcast, 10:57 p.m. Central Time, have not lost a game at Twin Family Stadium yet. See, so got that going for. If they can get past Air Force, somehow they got to make that game up. So, I agree with you there. If you want to make a run towards trying to get yourself more postseason baseball, they got to try to find a way to make that up somehow. So, they did that. I believe it was not Morehead State. I think it was Central Connecticut State where one of the games got postponed because of weather.
Yep.
And they made it into a doubleheader. So, they did the right decision there.
Yep.
So, I don't know what the reason is why they can't do this a doubleheader. I don't understand that. And it is a two-game series. So, I don't know. Don't ask me. I'm just reading what it says.
Blame the clouds. Blame those clouds full of moisture that are dropping rain on top of Manhattan today.
Yeah, and it's been dropping for the last 2 days, and I'll be glad to see it out of here tomorrow morning. Yeah, TCU, Northern Colorado next Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the next weekend series, I'm not going to look too far ahead, but Oklahoma State comes to Toyton April 1st. That's not an April Fool's joke. that's for real. For a three-game set that begins on Friday, April 1st through the 3rd. So, interesting setup. Yeah, and that buffer, pretty decent there. In between, you have Creighton there, Texas Tech. I said I wasn't going to go ahead, but scrolling down here and then the Wichita State game a little later on a month as well. I can only remember that bad loss against Wichita State a year ago there where K-State had them and then they lost the lead there as well. So that's kind of a revenge game right there on a diamond for K-State baseball right there. So, but they got unfinished business though first with Air Force tomorrow, and then they got that three-game set, critical three-game set against 19th-ranked TCU this weekend. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden for the Pearl Project Podcast. Now, shifting gears to the K-State women's basketball. Of course, you have not listened to today's daily already. K-State losing in pretty much dominating fashion. NC State, it was just too much for a Jeff Mees squad. And then this one kind of... I think K-State surprisingly played them better the first time around than the second time around. I was hoping they would see them the first time, getting some looks, they would play a little bit better. Turns out NC State turned on the juices after the first quarter there. Was K-State took a lead on them a little bit. It's like, okay, all right, got something going. But NC State turned on the turbo boost and just ran away with this. But for K-State, you get a win against Washington State in the NCAA tournament. And I've been saying all along, even before the tournament started, these girls, they're going to get experience and they're going to learn from it. And Jeff Mitty said in his little post-game huddle in the locker room with his team that every game matters. And that kind of goes back to the whole men's situation this year with Bruce Weber's team, right? They're trying to play North Florida, trying to impress that resume. So every game matters. So definitely, K-State started off hot this year, and I've said all along they exceeded my expectations this year. Unfortunately, it comes to an end, but you have one of the best players on the floor, Ayoka Lee, and a rising superstar in Serena Sundell, and a good cast of characters around them, which they will get better next year. So, Alex, I kind of said enough this week already about this K-State women's team, and I'm excited for them going forward and what Jeff Mitty's doing to turn this thing around, especially from last year where they were at last year. 9-20, 9-21, something like that, where you had great players on your team and did not produce the results. So this year, you bring in the freshman trio, and they get it done. And it gets yourself a berth in the NCAA tournament. And on top of that, it's a bonus. You get a win in the NCAA tournament. Alex, what are your thoughts just on as a whole for this K-State women's basketball team this year?
Yeah, well, you know, as a whole, I think you're right. Obviously, it was a successful season. I don't think there's any denying that. A team that went from winning, I think you said it was 9 games, they finished dead last in the Big 12 last year, to a team that won 20 games and won a NCAA tournament game and made it to the second round. Obviously, that was a good season. Obviously, we would have taken at a heartbeat at the beginning of the season. I don't think there's any denying that. So it was a successful season. And I was really happy to see them get that win in the first round. I really didn't want them to go one and done. I really wanted to see them put up some fights and grit because I really felt like they were better than that 9-9 seed that they got. I really felt like this team was really more, when you look at what they could be, anywhere from like that 4-6 seed range, they just were so bad down the stretch.
Yeah,
and were just
yeah.
so unrecognizable that they kind of pegged them down. And I just wanted to see them come out and fight and beat a good team on a big stage and be able to show off Aoka Lee and let Aoka Lee get the attention that she deserves and let the women's team get the attention that they all deserve. Because the job that Serena Sundell's done has been amazing. She deserves the praise. Obviously, being a freshman point guard, coming in there, doing the things that she's done, looking at the Glenn sisters, what they've done. They've had tremendous seasons, especially Bree there. And, you know, looking at a lot of this young talent, and obviously some of those veterans seasoned in there, but looking at that young talent, for them to have that moment, have that shine, I thought that was something that was really important, and it was something that I feared they may not have because they were so bad down the stretch. And it was just, just was bumming me out because they were so good at the beginning, and I just really felt that they could be better than what they were doing. So it was nice that they were able to kind of rebound, as I mentioned in a podcast or two ago, rebound by getting a win there to close out Big 12 play. They did lose to Texas in the Big 12 tournament in their first game, but they played Texas close. I think they lost that game like 72-65, something like that. So they definitely played a close competitive. Texas is a top 10 team. I think that they ended up with a 2 or 3 seed. And then you come in and you beat Washington State. You beat a team that's seeded higher than you. You beat them by double digits. K-State got off. I think the other thing that was impressive is K-State got off to a really slow start.
Mm-hmm.
They only scored 5 points in the first quarter, but they didn't let it get them down. Things weren't necessarily going for them, clicking for them, but it didn't stop them, and they were able to overcome it and beat a good Washington State team and hold them to 40 points. Holding anybody to 40 points in the NCAA tournament is a good thing. So unless you're South Carolina, I think South Carolina was up like 44-4 at halftime their game. I think that was halftime score. I can't remember who they were playing, but I remember turning it on. It was like 40. It was 44-4 at halftime. I'm pretty sure it's South Carolina. Either. Yeah. Women's basketball is not quite the same as men's. You don't get quite the same amount of upsets. It doesn't feel like the parity's quite there. But either way, K-State with a. There were some upsets in the women's bracket. There were. I shouldn't make it sound like there wasn't. There was some. Not as many as the men's, but there was. They did a nice job against Washington State. I was really happy to see them have that moment. And they were obviously really excited about it. Yeah. You mentioned it, though. They came in against NC State, and they did not play better than they did the first time. They played worse, in my opinion. And I was with you, Eddie. I was kind of holding out hope that K-State might be able to make it a game. They saw them earlier in the year. They played them pretty well. I think it was. Was it in NC State? It was not in Bramlage. It was either neutral floor or NC
State. No, it was at NC State.
Okay, so it was in that gym. It was in that same gym against that same team. And they played them. NC State did get that win by around 20-ish points, but K-State did play them pretty well. And so, I don't know, I thought that, that could help the Cats in their matchup against NC State. But, K-State did get off to a good start. I think you mentioned it there, Eddie. K-State got off, I think it was 11-10. And then the first 1st, K-State was only down 4. It was 17-13. They got off to a decent start, but the second, third quarters are what killed them. You know, NC State outscored them by 12 in the second and 11 in the third. And that dug them in a hole. That was just obviously way too surmountable. They lose that game by 32 points. Anytime that Aoka Lee is not leading you in field goal attempts, that's probably not a good thing. And she did not lead the team in field goal attempts in that game. So, you know, you want Aoka Lee to get up more than 10 shots. When you're going up against NC State. But with that said, she did have a little bit of foul trouble. I know she did finish with four foul.
Mm-hmm.
And so she didn't get quite as many minutes as she would typically get. And also, the NC State's got some really good play from their front court, so which will make life more difficult for Aoka Lee. All in all, Eddie, with the women's team, successful season. Really proud of them. Really proud of what they did. Real proud of Jeff Meade for the job that he did with them as well. And you mentioned them in the locker room. Them discussing. Him discussing with the team how proud of him he was. And he pretty much told them, if you want to be hosting this game, you now know every game matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every game matters. If you want to be hosting this game next year, every game matters. And, he was hammering that home, and, hopefully that's the goal. Hopefully it is their goal, Eddie, to host that game next year. Because I think they're capable of it. I do. With Aoka Lee coming back, and with that young talent getting a full offseason, getting another year under their belt, and with K-State having some additions kind of around the corner to come in and help fill the roster out. I think you can have a team that could be hosting that. Things go. We saw that at times from this K-State team. We saw them compete with South Carolina. We saw them compete with NC State. We saw them just about beat Iowa State. We saw them beat Oklahoma by 30 points on their home court. Or I should say they're all court in Bramlage on K-State's home court. We've seen them compete against the best talent in women's basketball. They can take that step. I think that's realistic for them. I think the one thing that leaves that bitter taste in your mouth is still the way that season ended. I just would have liked to see him more competitive with NC State, Eddie. I just lose by over 30 points. I don't know. The way that they were looked in some of those games late, the way they got blown out in some of those games against Baylor, and then there was another one they got blown out at. I think it was maybe it was Iowa State on the road. I can't remember what it was.
It was Iowa State.
Was it Iowa State? Yeah. Okay. Like I said, I wasn't expecting them to beat NC State, but I would have preferred to not lose by over 30 in that game. I would have liked to see K-State put up a little more resistance there. But they just were not playing as good down the stretch as they were at the beginning. They clearly kind of flamed out, and they obviously did a nice job kind of getting the train back on the tracks. They're near the end of the season, like I said, winning that Big 12 game. Giving Texas a fight, beating Washington State and winning in that first round, so they definitely did kind of get the train back on the tracks, but they never fully looked like that team that we saw in December and January. That team in February and March, it just never quite looked the same. So like I said, they did get better, but it never quite fully get back in the tracks. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean too much, because I don't think that there was really anything they probably could have done to beat NC State. I just would have liked to see them more competitive. But either way, not going to harp too much on them kind of flaming out at the end of the season. Definitely want to applaud them for winning 20 games, applaud them for making the NCAA tournament, applaud them for winning in the NCAA tournament and getting the credit they deserve. And, hopefully they can come back stronger than ever, Eddie. And, in a perfect world, we'll see them hosting that regional game next year.
Yeah, one could think, right? So definitely some possible momentum for K-State women's basketball heading into their offseason after a 20-win season. I believe that's the fourth 20-win season in Jeff Mitty's tenure here at Kansas State. The Purple Project Podcast, episode 92, about to come to a close. And now we officially go to our favorite segment, Step Out of Bounds, and go back into the, this time to the NFL. If we have seen quite some movement, quite some movement in the NFL. Since some surprise moves, Devontae Adams going back west to reunite with Derek Carr. And that AFC West is going to be loaded. It is going to be loaded, all caps.
Holy moly.
That's going to be loaded there. Yeah, I will get to the Falcons in momentarily with that. Let's see. There's been some other moves going on as well. Bengals have been upgrading their offensive line the last several days, given that. Let's see. I got to change my tab here a little bit. Yeah, there's been so much been going on lately, obviously. Chargers upgrading a little bit, staying in AFC West. That might be the best division in all of the NFL, honestly. Might have topped the AFC North, in my opinion, there. So, let's see what we got here. I'm going to wait for my computer to load here. Okay, so
your old technology never ceases to fail you.
Never to fail. Okay, so obviously Aaron Donald, the Rams trying to get a long term done with him, but they still want OBJ though. Still though, Seattle don't have a quarterback. whole Aaron Rodgers situation, that whole mess there. Back with Green Bay, but doesn't have Devontae Adams there. Jaguars, all that money. Apparently wants to get better quickly, and they spent a lot of money. So there's that there. Julio, not part of Titans no more. He got released. Leonard Fournette came back to the Bucks along with Tom Brady. So Jameis Winston also has re-signed with his New Orleans Saints. He made a two-year deal. We ended up after the whole Deshaun Watson mess. Deshaun Watson, by the way, went to Cleveland. We're on the doorsteps of not. I didn't want him anyways, but the way that this was played out was very costly. It's very, very sloppy. And that whole situation, Matt Ryan. You did the right thing, my friend. You did the right thing. Get out of Atlanta while you can. He's with the Indianapolis Colts. Oh, that NFC AFC South looks pretty toasty now as well over there. So that Matt Ryan to the Colts makes them automatically right up there with Super Bowl contenders. The Colts, what they got already, they were a quarterback away, and Matt Ryan's better than Carson Wentz. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Carson Wentz, injury prone, very inconsistent. Colts had an opportunity to make the playoffs. All you have to do is beat the Jaguars. You don't do it. You fall flat in your face, and they don't want you no more. This is just like that. Get them out of there. And Carson Wentz, by the way, went to the Commanders. For those of you who've been under a rock for the last couple months, NFL has been making some moves. And oh, by the way, the Falcons, we get that draft pick from a couple years ago, who was like number two behind Winston, Marcus Mariota. If we had a quarterback, we should have drafted one last year. Nothing against Kyle Pitts. This new regime, if you wanted a quarterback, you should have drafted one last year.
I was thinking, I wonder if the Falcons regret not taking quarterback and taking Pitts. But they couldn't get rid of Matt Ryan last year.
No, yeah, because of all cap. Because of the cap, because of all that money, yeah. Keeping restructuring every year, restructuring the stupid contract because of the old regime, Thomas Dimitroff giving all that money to Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, Grady Jarrett, Deion Jones. Deion Jones didn't do squat. He's continued to regress at linebacker. Aldis, we kept trying to keep Foyer. Lucan, who signed that big-time deal with Jaguars, $45 million. That was a little overpriced, in my opinion, but still happy for Foyer.
Everything the Jaguars have done this offseason has been too pricey. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, really, so I did not agree with the contract, but again, glad Foyer is getting his money, but I think it's a little too much money there. Yes, he did lead the league in tackles last year, but... he still has to work on his game a little bit. He still has issues, inconsistency with tackling, so he has to work on that. But, yeah, Falcons, have to really dig themselves out of a hole. And this was not Terry Fontenot's fault, Arthur. This was clearly Arthur Blank trying to get Deshaun Watson, obviously Deshaun Watson having early ties and whatnot to the Falcons, throwing to Julio Jones back in the day, being the ball boy of the Falcons and whatnot. That whole situation, this threw me off of left field. I was not expecting us to get him, to even try to get him on his team. There's definitely, we talked about this a little bit with you before I had to record, but definitely mixed bag of emotions from the Falcons on Falcons Twitter. That was for sure. A lot of people are not happy with it. And there's a sigh of relief, but also kind of still some madness about the whole thing. I'm not going to go over Deshaun Watson. Obviously, I'm going to let everybody else do that. So, yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see what we do at 8. Does Fontenot and Arthur Smith, the head coach of the Falcons, get their guy in his draft? This quarterback class... And we saw one of them earlier this year, K-State football, Carson Strong, from Nevada. That might be a possibility, but I'm hearing, or reading, I should say, that we're shooting for Malik Willis. So that's definitely been a possibility.
Yeah, that's been a hot name.
That has been a hot name for the Falcons. So it is going to be intriguing to see now. We missed out on quarterback.
You know what you got to do. You need to take Skylar Thompson. Come on. That's what you got to do. That's your franchise QB.
That's a good tie-in to the Pro Project Podcast. That's slick.
He's a franchise QB. By the way, I have no idea where Skylar's going to go in the draft. I've literally seen mock drafts that have had him from the third round to undrafted. No idea where he's going to fall.
I don't know where he's going to fall. Yeah, because he's been carrying that in-season momentum from the Texas Bowl where he lit up LSU to the offseason. He's really done some good things, getting himself right to possibly get drafted. Yeah, that's a good call there. Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you.
Yeah,
I don't know
all over the place.
Where he could go. I'm going to go a round lower. Round higher, excuse me. Go round four or an unrestricted free agent. That's where I'm going to go with that. But it's anybody's guess out of where he lands, especially if he continues to work on his game, get better, continue to impress those scouts out there. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, that's what the Falcons are looking at. Let's see. But... outside of the whole Watson mess, we picked up some pretty good players as well to try to patch in peace and at least try to be competitive. So, we have the top of my head, Casey Hayward. We signed him. We signed our kicker, our reliable kicker, to a 5-year deal. Young Wei Koo, one of the best kickers in the game. We signed Damian Williams, the backup running back for Chicago. Yep, former Chief. Yes, sir. Oklahoma Sooner. And we re-signed Cordero Patterson. Now I wanted him back on the team. So Falcons have done some nice things outside of that. So, you know, other than the mess up, or the Sean Watson mess up, other than that, Falcons have done their best. I'll give them that, to piece together a competitive team. So I'm pleased with the moves. So, Chiefs, Alex, obviously, already mentioned the AFC West. Any more moves of the Chiefs? Oh, Brian Pringle, Purple Project Podcast, former K-State Wildcat specialist and wide receiver, going to Chicago Bears. So, yeah.
Going to Chicago Bears. So, Byron Pringle, good spot to start. You know, he was a guy that I think that most Chiefs teams have wanted back for the right price. I just don't think that the Chiefs were willing to go $6 million a year with Pringle. I think they would have gone maybe $4 million a year, but I don't think they're willing to go that high. And I get it. You know, Pringle had a good year. You know, he had a good year. He had over 500 yards receiving. He had over 5 touchdowns on the year, and that was really as kind of probably a third, fourth option on that offense. And you can put up the stance. So I'm not surprised with Chicago. Chicago's new GM is actually former player personnel employee from the Chiefs this past season. So he just kind of was like, I'm gonna take you from our old place and bring you over here. So good for Byron. Happy for him. Happy that he got the. You know, happened that he got the bag there. I should say the bag. It was 1 year, $6 million deal, but he'll get to be a top two receiver there, I think, in Chicago. The Chiefs, they signed Juju. They signed Juju Smith-Schuster, to be their wide receiver two. I think that was a really good move. I had him as my top target for the Chiefs going into the offseason, primarily because I thought that it was going to be the best value deal that they could get a receiver. You know, the best player for the value. Didn't necessarily mean PB the best receiver on the market, but when you looked at just, once again, value of the player compared to what you're paying them, I thought that he was by far the best they could do. The Chiefs were obviously linked to a handful of guys. They were linked to Jarvis Landry. They were linked to Allen Robinson. Then they were obviously linked to Juju. I think that Juju was the right move there. I really feel like he can be. We can see the kind of the old Juju that we saw back when the Steelers had AP, and back when Big Ben still was kind of Big Ben. Kind of had the skill sets, could throw the ball a little bit better than he could here the last couple of years. But we'll see. I think Juju can go anywhere from, I think Juju, like at 700 to 900 yard type of guy for the Chiefs. Anywhere from 5 to 10 touchdowns. I think he can be a really good contributor. I think the biggest thing that Juju can do for the Chiefs, Eddie, is he can really open things up for the other guys. I think one of the biggest problems the Chiefs had was teams would really get too high safety. They kept throwing the too high safety look at the Chiefs, and then they would rotate that over to like a single, just like a single high look. They would chip, they would have guys chip and safeties come up and double team Travis Kelce. They would have to bring Tyreek Hill underneath because of that too high look, and he couldn't hit with that vertical stuff. And so, it kind of threw the Chiefs offense out of whack. And I think Juju kind of helps free a lot of that up because Juju can. He lives in the middle of the field. He lives in that short to intermediate route, that kind of short to intermediate route tree. And he's really good yards after catch. And I think he can do a lot of damage in midfield and allow Travis Kelce to get back to not having to take so many hits underneath. Can kind of get a little bit more back to his game. And then Tyreek Hill can turn into a vertical threat, which he really wasn't a lot last year, just because the Chiefs didn't really have the ability without Sammy Watkins. So I think that was a really good move for them. And I really like Justin Reed. Getting him to be your other safety there with Juan Thornhill. I thought it was the right move to go with him over Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu was amazing for 3 years for the Chiefs, but you want to get young and cheaper, and it appears that was the way to do it. Justin Reed is a really, really good safety, and he seems to have a lot of the qualities that the Chiefs are looking for. Really a lot of Tyrann Mathieu qualities, to be honest with you, especially in kind of his leadership role. The concern with the Chiefs, that he is that defensive line,
And that defensive end position at edge, the Chiefs are not in a good spot right now. The defensive line, they're not in a good spot right now. So they need to figure something out there. I don't know what they'll do. They restructured Brent Clark. They brought back Derek Nnadi. So they made some moves, but they need to do some more work at edge there. They did sign today former K-Stater Elijah Lee to be a linebacker for them. They've obviously got their two linebackers, Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, who are really going to be they're their two kind of bell cows at linebacker. Two really good young guys, and I still think the Chiefs may take a linebacker early, early to mid rounds in the draft, and just kind of like double down that position and say, you know what, we're just going to really make this linebacking core a strength of ours. But if they don't do that, I think that you could absolutely see Elijah Lee kind of as that third linebacker that they could kind of replace Ben Neiman in there, so that'll be interesting to see there. And, you know, you look at the corner position, they obviously lost their best corner. He went to San Francisco, and the Chiefs have to figure something out there, too. So there's some question marks on that defense, and question marks on the defense that is not the best thing when you look at the West, where you now have quarterbacks of Russell Wilson, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr, and then you've got weapons like Devontae Adams, and you have got defensive ends all over the division. Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, Reedy Gregory, Nick Chubb, Chandler Jones, Max Crosby. Oh my gosh. They're all over the place. So, yeah, there are a lot of pass rushers, a lot of playmakers, a lot of good quarterbacks. It's going to be a lot of offense, buddy. I guess probably the best way to put it. And somebody asked this question. I heard it on a podcast today. They said, could we, for the first time, get all four teams in a division that makes playoffs? And I don't think that can happen in the West, just because I think they're going to beat up on each other too much. I really do. But valid question, because they also said, if you take the team that will finish fourth in the West, you put them to AFC South, could they win the South? But the last place team in the West, could they finish first in the South? I would still pick probably the Titans or the Colts, one of the two. But I absolutely could see that. I could see that scenario where one of the last place team in the West would go win 10, 11 games in the AFC South. So the AFC West is going to be crazy. You mentioned the AFC North. You look up there and you've got Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow. And it's just like, oh my gosh, the AFC is just insane. Now you throw Matt Ryan over into the AFC South with the young and emerging Trevor Lawrence over there, who I still am really high on. And then, you know, we're not even talking, about Josh Allen right now either in the discussion. The AFC is just insane, Eddie. And I meant no ill will, and I tweeted that the AFC is a fire emoji and that the NFC is a trash bin emoji. No shot at anyone. It's just, it feels like everybody's loaded in the AFC, and the NFC feels like there's nothing there. You look around at the NFC. So you got Tom Brady, right? You got Aaron Rodgers. And you got Kyler Murray and Matt Stafford. But outside of that, you look around, and sure, you've got the Cowboys, okay, whatever. You got the Cowboys in the NFC, in the NFC East. But outside of them, Eagles, whatever, Giants, haha, and then the Commanders, well, they got Carson Wentz. And then you go to the South, we mentioned Tom Brady. You look at the Falcons, they got Mariota. You look at the Saints, okay, they got Wentz, Jameis Winston coming back. They got the Panthers, I have no idea. And then you look at the NFC North. Well, I'm missing, you got Rodgers, but then what? Kirk Cousins, Justin Fields, and Jared Goff.
That's right.
And,
yep.
And,
that's right.
And then, by the way, you look at these rosters. You look at Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he's back in Green Bay. That's great. Who on earth is he throwing the football to? I have no idea who he's throwing the football to. I don't have a clue. And you look at the Rams. The Rams have lost a lot of guys. They've lost a ton of guys as well, because they had a lot of guys that were on contracts. You mentioned it. They may be trying to get OBJ back. They did sign Allen Robinson. So they made some moves. But you got that going on. And then, obviously, you go to the NFC West, which is probably the best division, I would think, in the NFC. Because you got Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. You obviously got the Super Bowl champs there in the Rams. And then you got the 49ers. We were obviously in the NFC Championship game this last year. But even they have a QB question. We don't know who's going to be playing QB for them either. Is it going to be Garoppolo? Are they going to trade Garoppolo? Is it going to be Garoppolo? Are they going to try to go with Trey Lance? What are they going to do there? Don't exactly know. They've got a good roster, but we just don't know what they're going to do there either. And of course, Eddie, of course the AFC West is scheduled to play the NFC West this next year, the best division in football. So, for my Chiefs, they're going to get to go up against Russell Wilson twice, Justin Herbert twice, Derek Carr twice, Tom Brady, excuse me, Matthew Stafford, and Kyler Murray. And they're also going up against Matt Ryan. You're going up against Matt Ryan and Trevor Lawrence. So, They are definitely going to. Of course, they are obviously going up against the Bills as well, and they'll get Josh Allen too. So, yes, there's a big difference in AFC and NFC, in my opinion, right now. So this is an incredibly long-winded answer. I apologize, but so much has happened in the NFL. This free agency period has just been insane. If the AFC West would like to just calm down a little bit, that would be fine by me. But I told my brother this. I told you this before we jumped on the podcast. I was talking to my brother today about just getting caught up on all NFL, kind of the NFL things. And, I told him, I said, because I do still feel like the Chiefs are the favorites in the AFC West. I think the Chiefs and the Bills are the two best teams in the AFC right now. I would actually give the Bills a slight edge over the Chiefs, to be 100% honest with you. I think they're a little more complete right now. We'll see what it looks like at the end of the offseason. But as of now, the Bills a slight edge. But I told my brother, I said, man, if the Chiefs win the West, you know, how satisfying will that be? You know, with every AFC West team taking their best shot, just taking their best shot at the Chiefs right now. And if the Chiefs are able to absorb it and win the division and just be able to, if they can do it, even if they're able to do it, you know, on the road, in L.A., in Denver, in Vegas, and then just be able to remind those fans and those teams that, like, hey, this is our division still. I told them, I said, that would be really, really sweet. Now, after everything these teams have done this offseason to try to get the Chiefs, if they could have that moment and win a seventh straight AFC West title, that would be quite satisfying. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But either way, free agency has definitely been a frenzy. I think that there's still some more to come, to be 100% honest with you. And we haven't gotten the draft yet. So, we'll see what the draft has in store. That's obviously going to be where the Chiefs are hoping to do a majority of their damage. I don't think the Chiefs ever play enough big, really big players in free agency. I think that the draft is where kind of they've been banking on doing a good chunk of their damage, just as they did last year. I think it's what they're looking to do this year, too. So we'll see what things look like here in about a month or so.
The NFL edition by Alex Aiden on the Purple Project podcast. That's a perfect way to end episode 92. Of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, folks. Again, find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcast. We at least record a daily, almost every day. And this week, you are actually going to get two episodes this week. We're supposed to do two. Well, technically, we did get two episodes. So definitely, you missed out on all the content that came out last week. Definitely go back and check that out. We have older episodes in the archives now as well. If you're new to the podcast, appreciate you as well. I got stopped after the 10K here in Manhattan on Saturday, and he said we're doing a good job, so I know people are listening to the Purple Project podcast. So definitely shout out. I did not get his name because I was heading off to seeing some other people and greeting them. So definitely I know people are listening to the Purple Project podcast, definitely with the content we've been putting out lately as well. So appreciate you guys for hopping on board. Especially to you guys that have been following us for quite a while. So definitely appreciate you guys as well. Continue to spread the word about that other K-State podcast, the Purple Project podcast. And of course, Thursday we will be recording with a special guest early because of the time frame with our special guest. I cannot leak that right now. Hopefully Alex will join me in the middle of the conversation, maybe. So
that was the hope. We should, Eddie mentioned that we're recording a little early. Well, it's actually not that early for you guys. It's a little early for me because it's a bit like 5 p.m. for me, and I work from home. I think I've told you that before.
Yep.
Yeah, I work from home, and for me, my work day is pretty flexible. I typically stop working anywhere, usually just depending on what's going on, between 4:30 and 5:30, and we're going to be recording at about 5, so I really don't know when exactly I'll be wrapping up, but yeah, hopefully, either way, I'll be able to jump on there, if not the beginning, hopefully shortly thereafter. Look forward to our conversation on Thursday. It should be a good one, and I think the listeners will really enjoy it.
Oh yeah, definitely excited about that one as well. Episode 92 will come out tomorrow night. That one will record Thursday with our special guest. We'll be out on Friday. That is going to wrap things up for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Alex Eden out there in San Diego. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. We will do this again Thursday. Alex, hopefully you'll join us.
I'll drop you there.
We're out. See ya.
Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.